At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the 2 of the 1st. It's March 5th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballinger. Thanks for being here today. We've got plenty to talk about. Primarily, it's a kind of semantics-type show. We've kind of been wonky about this subject matter for the last couple of years. But this is a subject matter that I think is worth getting into one last time before we kind of wrap this thing up, because this part of the Live PGA Tour saga, Live saga even unto itself, ends here today, seemingly. And that is with the withdrawal of the application from Live Golf to be recognized by the official World Golf Ranking. Sports Illustrated Bob Herrig, who has covered Live Golf pretty extensively over the last couple of years, he was the first to report this. And the withdrawal was made on Tuesday, apparently. Well, it was probably made on Monday, but announced on Tuesday. And Greg Norman, who is the CEO and commissioner of Live Golf, wrote a letter to the players on Live Golf, and probably some officials as well, explaining the decision to withdraw their application. So for all practical terms, this means Live Golf doesn't want OWGR recognition anymore. They don't want to pursue it. They aren't going to get it. And they could reapply. They can do that. They can come back and say, all right, well, we've changed our mind. Here's our new application. Here's what we'd like to do differently to get recognition. Please and thank you. However, withdrawing it means there's no more debate about it. There's no, oh, you can't use it as a crutch in your broadcasts like they have for two of the three tournaments, primarily the ones Joaquin Niemann's won. They can't go and say, well, how are you not ranked in the world ranking? How are you not higher in the world ranking? Well, they're giving up on that. Seemingly. And I think part of that has to do with the reality that Joaquin Niemann's been invited to two major championships. He got invited to the Masters, and then yesterday came out that the PGA of America would invite him to the PGA Championship. Now, the Masters, when they explained their invitation to him and Torbjörn Olsen, and I forget the third person, I'm sorry, but the explanation specifically around Niemann was for his winning the Australian Open. And by winning the Australian Open, Niemann also got into the Open Championship. So he's in three majors next year, or this year, I should say. And a lot of that seems to have come off of that victory in the Australian Open. The PGA Championship giving him that invitation really seems to be predicated on not only the Australian Open, but winning the two Live Golf tournaments out of the first three. They've got another one this week. And the major championships effectively saying, look, we don't need the OWGR to recognize your players to know which ones are playing well. It's not how it works. Like, you can see who wins tournaments. You can see who finishes highly. You can see who gains strokes on their peers in their tour, where they play. Niemann has played well outside of Live, so even if you want to say the Live Golf tournaments are meaningless, completely meaningless, you'd still have to say Niemann is playing well because he won the Australian Open. He's played well in the Asian Tour events that I've seen him play. I mean, it's there. Like, it's there to see, and there it is. Like, he's playing well. You cannot deny that, and I don't think anyone's trying to. So, taking all that into account, you go, okay, give him a spot in the majors. Well, that eliminates, frankly, some of the usefulness of the OWGR as a crutch, right? Because the Masters, to a degree, without saying they're recognizing Liv, have recognized Liv, and the PGA of America, without necessarily being so explicit about it, has recognized Liv. At least, if you're good enough to destroy the 10-man tour, then you probably should get an invite to a major, because if you're going to invite players based on being in the top 100 in the world and they can't get ranking, well, I mean, I'm pretty sure I could easily argue Joaquin Niemann's in the top 100 of the world. I don't need the OWGR to tell me that. So now that's not a useful crutch. It's just not. So it makes sense for them to withdraw the application and go, okay, well, here we are. We've got a 54-person league. We've got 13 teams. We've got two players who don't compete with any team. We've got a 12-event regular season. We've got a team championship. We've got an individual championship. This is our chance to prove through this format that we are worthy of additional invitations to majors. Part of the problem, though, with LIV is that their best players are the ones who most recently won majors. They're in the majors as it is. There's like a 10 to a dozen guys who are going to be in the Masters because they have a bunch of prior champions. They went out of their way to get prior major champions, which was the smart thing to do with the enormous amount of money that they spent, right? So a lot of them already have berths into the Masters or the PGA Championship or the Open, like in the case of Henrik Stenson. He gets to play till he's 60. He's always going to be in there. He's always going to be in a major. For Cam Smith, when he won the Open, he guaranteed himself opportunities to play in the majors for 5 years running, and he's going to be in the Open until he's 60. Brooks Koepka has won the PGA Championship last year. He's won the U.S. Open. He's got running exemptions into the majors for 5 years. He's good. Dustin Johnson. He's won the U.S. Open and the Masters. He won the Masters in 2020, so he's got one additional year left on his five-year exemption for winning that. He gets to go to the Masters for the rest of his life, and he gets to play in the U.S. Open really through 2026 because he won in 2016, so he gets a 10-year for that. And then the Open and the PGA, you get, you know, your 5 years. Sergio Garcia, Masters champion. Playing better. I mean, he's not, I don't think he's a very good player right week to week, right? I mean, maybe he's top 150 in the world. So top 100 in the world, perhaps. All right, well, if they decide they want to invite him, they'll invite him. If not, then they won't. But the problem with the official World Golf Ranking at this point for LIV is two things. One, it's no longer a useful foil. But two, even if today, before the application had been withdrawn, the OWGR went to Norman and LIV and said, okay, we'll give you points now. Sounds good. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for waiting it out for us. 19 months into it, right? Then, to almost 20 months. Then you go and say, okay, well, how many points do we get per tournament? Oh, about 22, 23, 24, 25, something like that. And you're going to get basically the same amount of points within plus or minus two every week all year long. And oh, by the way, because your players don't play at least 20 tournaments per year, many of them, then they are subject to the artificial denominator. Basically, it's a penalty. You are expected to play 20 tournaments per year. So the minimum divisor is 40. So if you don't play 20 tournaments per year, you get docked because you get an extra tournaments added to your tournament tally. So you got to play at least 20 times. Well, where are you going to play those? That means you got to go play Asian Tour events. Well, the Asian Tour events only get like 15, 16 points to the winner, maybe 18, 19. So they're worse than LIV, and if you don't do well, then you get an extra tournament and you get almost no points. It's not even worth it. So there's really no incentive, and we've talked about this for the better part of a year, maybe even longer, where at this point in the game, and this was like 6 months into it, it didn't make any sense to continue this application because so many of the players had earned 0 points for so long that they would fall precipitously, and even if they signed new fresh players, those players would not be able to sustain the tournament ranking for LIV to give enough points to help everybody out. It wouldn't even, the math wouldn't even make sense. Been beating that drum for a while. Wrote an article about it a year ago, at least. And here we are, you know? Or maybe not a year ago, but it's been a while. It's probably been more than a year. So they have finally come to the realization that they've waited, it's been too long. It's been 20 months. You're not, even if you got points now, it would never get you back to where you were unless you win the majors. The only things that could help LIV golfers is that all of the LIV players who could get into majors basically finished in the top 10. All of them. They had to be great. And that could bring up the point value of each tournament. Otherwise, it's the same every week. All the players who stink would get no points. Their ranking would go down, so they would mean less. And ultimately, it would all hurt LIV because the OWGR is not built to handle the same 54 players competing every single week. And we've talked about that, which is why the OWGR said, hey, we can't have you in the system because we're not built to handle that. We can handle 54 hole events. We can handle no cut. We can handle limited fields. We got all that. We can come up with ways to handle that. What we can't handle is that you play against the same players all the time because you have strokes gained world ranking. Well, if you play the same players all the time, that's always zero. It always nets out. So there's nothing to do. And then you have really no relevant system of promotion and relegation. You have four players. You have three you get in through your promotions tournament, which, by the way, is more or less a lottery system because it's not a 72-hole tournament. It's two 18-hole tournaments and a 36-hole tournament. And then you have one spot for the Order of Merit on the International Series. That makes sense. That's fine. Why not three spots or four spots? Keep people coming in and out. So effectively, you have four people who come in and out of the league. When it was 48 players, that's a little less than 10%. When it's 54 players, that's definitely less than 10%. It's more like 8% turnover every year. And the rest are determined by contracts that have no basis on merit because Anthony Kim's in the league. And they're only based on whether they're willing to sign and you want them. There's no performance criteria. So there you go. And you also can't relegate players who have contracts that run beyond the current season because you have to keep them in the league. So your guys like Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter, who are not playing well and have not really played well ever on LIV, they can keep going because they're captains of teams. They've signed deals. And this was all known. None of this was particularly complex. This was known for a long time by LIV. But they have tried to use this as a drumbeat for a while. And eventually people get numb to it and understand why, if they want to understand, or otherwise just go, look, just play. If there are ways into majors other than the first two, right? You can qualify for the US Open. You can qualify for the Open Championship. Open Championship qualifying is extremely difficult, even harder than the US Open, in my opinion, because there are so few spots. But you also have an open qualifying series. They make it pretty easy. Go play in a tournament where there's an open qualifying series event. Finish in the top three or top four, whatever it needs to be, top two. You're in the open. You can be a LIV player and do that. Have a great time. But the OWGR just isn't going to give them points because the system just isn't compatible. So them withdrawing, it really kind of puts an end to a chapter of this kind of long haul fight. Now, Norman said there needs to be a neutral ranking. Well, they've touted a bunch of different supposed neutral rankings. The Sports Illustrated one, which is not neutral because LA Golf sponsors Bryson DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson. So they're not neutral. And it was designed to be over a one-year time frame, which is a horrible way of measuring golf, in my opinion. And the Universal Golf Ranking, which is more like the Sagarin ranking, but with some extra stuff thrown in, is definitely not good either. So if you want to come up with your own system, and this is what I've said from the beginning, LIV should come up with their own system. Come up with their own way of ranking their own players, and not just based on their points that they earn. Use some actual data. Don't just tell me, oh, well, they finished first, second, eighth, and 20th. Their average finish is whatever, they're the best. No, you gotta explain to me in data terms, I think. And they've never done that. Because they don't do that. They don't have shot link yet. They're getting there. That is coming. And I think that their best argument is to try to use data. But it is hard to contextualize a lot of the players on LIV, as we've talked about, because most of them are irrelevant. Again, this is a 10 to 12 man tour. I think it's a 10 man tour, depending on how you feel about a 12. But it's really a 10 person tour. So how do you compare that? How do you compare that to any other tour? How do you compare that to the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour? It's hard to do, I admit, but that's the best option that you have. And then you can make the case to the governing bodies for the major championships that top two, top three, top four, whatever players from LIV can be invited to majors based on their performance. And if you do that, I think that's your best argument. Otherwise, just forget it and hope. Now, all this comes as we were talking about the rumor mongering yesterday of LIV potentially walking away and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia walking away from the negotiations with the PGA Tour. So if all of that happens, and let's just kind of, we know the OWGR thing happened. We don't know about the negotiation thing, right? But let's say it all kind of falls apart, just for argument's sake. I think there's some things here that's some fallout from Liv. One, because a lot of players were told that they were going to get world ranking points eventually. Might not have been right away, but they were going to get them when they signed with Liv. So that's not happening. So that's got to make a number of players upset, especially the ones who don't have easy access to at least one major. Because if you have access to one major, you have a chance of finishing high enough in one that you get into the others. Or that you earn enough OWGR points from that alone that you might get into the others. You know, things like that. If you're not one of those players, you don't have that chance. And you got to be fuming mad about that. You got to be mad about that. That you were sold that. You signed on to that. Yeah, you got compensated for it. But now it's definitely not happening. So you got to have some subset of players who are like, what the heck? Yeah, I got paid, but now I can't ever play in a major again unless I go on some miraculous run in my career. You know, that's not great. And at the same time, I think if Liv is going to try to be truly insular and try to go this alone, then what is the next step for the Liv format? Why are they still playing individual tournaments? That would be my next question. Because the differentiating factor on Liv, whatever you think of it, is having team competition. And the team competition is one of the biggest hangups, top three hangups from the OWGR perspective of getting points. So, but it's also the thing that Yasser Al-Rumayyan believes will unlock tremendous amounts of value. Hasn't yet, probably never will. That's my view. But he may be right. And you always kind of have to hold that out there. So if that's their belief and they really want to go in on the team golf thing, scrap the individual stuff. Have $25 million purses, award money to the top five teams or something. I'm just making this stuff up. Five teams, six teams. The winning team gets, you know, $7 million and they split it. And the second place team gets three and, you know, go down the line. I don't know. I have to do that math in my head. But lean into that. Go do that. At least that's something different. And you still get to watch those guys play golf. You could still say, oh, well, watch John Rahm and Legion 13 take on Brooks Koepka and the Smash, you know, in Hong Kong this week. Okay. That's what you should lean into. Forget the individual stuff because people understand golf as an individual sport because it almost always is at a professional level. If you want to try to change things up, make it a team thing, like all teams. Like no individual standings, no, oh, here's a sideshow $5 million pot for the team thing, but you should absolutely care about the teams. Flip the script. Have an individual, have the $20 million be the team thing, have $5 million be the individual thing. You win the individual competition, you get $1 million. You win the team thing, you get a whole lot more than that, though. Maybe you do that. I think that should have been from the get-go how it went. But here we are. Now, we don't have any ratings data, so if you care about that kind of thing, I don't have anything to add there. We probably will get all the data that we need for Sunday today. And frankly, that doesn't mean as much. But what I do want to talk about in kind of the second portion of this is what happens now with the PGA Tour signature events. We have 69 players in the field this week at the API. They expanded the field for the Puerto Rico Open from 120 in prior years to 132. So they added 12 players because there were fewer players who could potentially get into API. And it used to be, you know, 120 and 120. Well, no, it doesn't quite work out that way. So you've got 69 players in the field this week. They're not even attempting to kind of backfill the field to 72, 78, even though they have said that was kind of their target was 70 to 80 players. And I think that's a big mistake. I think you need to have at least 78 players in the field. Ideally, I would want to look at 90 players in the field. I think that's a nice round number. You can send them off in twos or threes. You have a cut to the top 50, 60, I don't care. You make it a quote unquote cut. I mean, better than like the top 50 and within 10 shots of the Genesis Open, but have 90 players in the field. Pay to the top 60 and or top 50, whatever you want to skew the pay table a little bit, but have a legitimate cut. You cut half the field. And if you get cut, you get $10,000 or $20,000, whatever it is. And that way, you still get paid for showing up. There's still a cut. It still feels like something's happening here that's more like a golf tournament you see week to week. Because 69 players just is, you're only 15 away from LIV at that point. And I don't think that's what you want. I don't think that's a good thing. Especially given the year that we've had so far. We have 5 first-time winners right now. So far in the year. We're, 10, 11 events in? So half the events have been won by somebody who's never won before. And as this season goes along, that's only going to increase. This is the year of new players, new first-time winners, year of stars. And that could totally turn on a dime, but the more likely outcome is you have like a dozen first-time winners this year out of 37, 38 tournaments. And those are the ones that aren't even Oppo Field events. Those aren't the ones that are in the playoffs where you're obviously almost certainly not going to have first-time winners. I mean, you could, but it's pretty unlikely. So why not lean into that a little bit more? Invite the players who are doing well now. Invite the players who are not in the top 10 or top 5 of the swing. Expand that. Make it the top 10 of the swing. Make it the top 15 in the standings. Something along those lines. I think the idea of trying to invite the top 10 players from the season that aren't otherwise qualified, if you could just back that out, you know, expand that just a little bit. Make it the top 25. You got to have more bodies in the field than this. It's just, it's not enough to sustain a full day of golf. And the LIV model is, hey, we do a shotgun start, we're done in 4.5 hours. Yeah, that's true. The PGA Tour model is, we're going to send everyone out there in order, off of 1 and 10, or just 1, 2s and 3s. But as an attendee, as a patron of the tournament, if you go for the full day, you can go from 7:30 in the morning to 7:30 at night kind of thing. And you can't really, I mean, you could space it out, but I don't think you're getting as much action. You're not getting as much for your dollar doing it that way. I think that you need to have a little bit more depth, meat to the field. And you can do this not only in terms of the current year FedEx Cup. Why don't you invite some Korn Ferry Tour guys? Guys who are playing well in the Korn Ferry Tour. Korn Ferry Tour top 3. Get them into the field this week. So something. You got to do something. You can't just do what you're doing right now because it just feels too short. It just feels too... The fields are very strong. I mean, you're going to get like 68 points to the winner this week of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And that's despite the penalty for having a smaller field. That's incredible. It's really incredible. But you can have even more points if you invite more players. Go invite the current top 5 on the Race to Dubai. Go invite the top 3 on the current Korn Ferry Tour points list. Go invite the reshuffle top 5. You know, the guys who graduated from, who are in, I don't know, outside the top 125. Go something. Just give me something to work with here because I think they're kind of not it's twisted in the wind a little bit because top players aren't winning. If Scottie Scheffler and Victor Hovland and Patrick Cantlay and Rory McIlroy had all won twice this year already, everybody's like, oh, I can't wait. This is great. You know, a matchup of guys who are crushing it this year. Well, they're not there yet. And that can change, but they're not there yet. So you've got these tournaments that they're not difficult to promote because you've got the stars, but you go, these are our stars. And then the skeptics go, well, they're not winning yet this year. So why should I watch them? And then you go and talk about the guys who have performed well outside of these events, you know, in the regular events. And they go, okay, well, we don't know them and they haven't won much. So why should we watch them? Well, you're going to have to lean into building star power because that's what you got to do when you lose a dozen guys to LIV. That's what you got to do when your best players aren't winning. You got to talk about a narrative of creating new stars. So use the signature events to take the new stars that have won, new players that have won, and invite them. Having a Jake Knapp here this week is great. A lot of people like Jake Knapp, like what they saw from him. Really, really cool for him. To have that opportunity for any player is fantastic, but for a guy who's 10, 11 starts into his PGA Tour careers is great. There just needs to be a little bit more filling out of these tournaments. And I hope that happens. It's not going to happen this year. They've established the criteria, so we're not going to change anything. But I hope it happens next year, thinking, how do we still make these things feel like a regular PGA Tour event, even if we truncate the field? 90 players, top 60, and ties make the weekend, or top 55, something like that. Add more players, give them the opportunity, pay them for being in it. That's cool, too. I don't think anyone minds a minor appearance fee for showing up. And that's it. And I think that would make this so much better. Nevertheless, we still got a really good tournament this week. API. I love the Puerto Rico Open. It's a fun one. I like Puerto Rico a lot. Got to play in this Pro-Am here like 5 years ago. And it was a really cool tournament. So hopefully we get some interesting winners from the Puerto Rico. We get an interesting Puerto Rico Open winner and their life changes. The last two winners haven't really done a whole lot with it between Nico Echevarria and Ryan Brehm, but sometimes that does mean something huge. Think about a Victor Hovland kind of guy. But we'll see what happens this week. We've got plenty to get to through the rest of the week. Get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy. I'm on Facebook, which apparently is down while I'm recording this, and on YouTube at Ryan Ballingy Golf. We'll talk to you tomorrow on 2 of the First. Thanks so much for listening today.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.